Hello, and welcome once again to Film Club. This is Jeff Yance. I'm the program director at the Loft Cinema, and we also have today occasional filmmaker Heather Lattis.
Hello, Jeff.
And multimedia artist Rusty Boulay Stevenson.
Hey, Jeff.
So, hello, guys. So, very exciting today at Film Club. We are tackling what can be a pretty intimidating topic.
An enigma.
Nicolas Cage, the great Nicolas Cage. One of the most interesting careers of an actor, I think, ever in the history of film.
Yeah.
Many, many different phases to talk about. So, of course, Nicolas Cage from the Coppola family dynasty, nephew of Francis Ford Coppola, and started out as Nick Coppola in the early 80s and then changed his name because he did not want to be riding on the coattails of the Coppola name. Took his name from a Marvel superhero character, Nick Cage.
Luke Cage.
Yeah. Luke Cage. And then off and running with his first film, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about early Nick Cage, because early Nick Cage is much different from later Nick Cage. So the 80s were a very interesting time for Nick Cage. One of my favorite movies from the 80s is Valley Girl, which I think was his first starring role in a film. Really great teen comedy.
Yes, loved it.
That's when I think I started realizing that Nick Cage was a really interesting actor, different from other teen actors of that time. Would you agree?
Yes. Well, he played the punk rock, kind of dangerous alternate boy compared to the suburban valley boys that valley girls were supposed to fall in love with.
Right. Yeah. And really, really quirky, kind of had that great punk look.
Eyeliner was there. Hair was all crazy.
Yeah.
Wore the spikes. It was great. I was like very much, that was the first time I ever recognized him, knew who he was, because he was like very alluring and alluring to the main character as well, because, you know, that was what she wasn't supposed to want, was a punk rock guy.
Yeah. And he wasn't like conventionally like movie star handsome, which I think was interesting that he became a leading man, but he didn't really look like a leading man that we were used to. And then, of course, later in the 80s, that's when he's sort of hitting his stride. Moonstruck, Raising Arizona.
Peggy Sue Got Married was the first one for me. When his turn as Charlie, Kathleen Turner's boyfriend and husband, that's the movie that I saw a lot and where I really borrowed a lot from that Nick Cage character even growing up. I liked his, that he was so quirky and odd. I appreciated that. And I love, he's got a line where he's sitting there with Peggy Sue and he starts talking about the Detroit Tigers pitching.
If you've
got two 20-game winners, you're bound to be in contention. And, you know, it's a really awkward moment for him. His friends are making out and he's not sure if he should. And I appreciated that kind of quirkiness and awkwardness. And I saw that movie a lot. They had Dollar Night at the theater where I lived. And I went and saw that probably four or five times at the theater. Mm. It was something I saw. And just because it was there, not because I loved it. I liked it. I've grown to appreciate it even more as an adult.
Yeah.
But he's great in that.
And directed by his uncle, Francis Ford Coppola, who has been open about discussing the problems he had with Nick Cage directing him in that film. Because I think this is one of the first times we saw Nick Cage in a mainstream film acting very strangely in a way that didn't necessarily mesh with the acting styles of some of the other actors in the film. Like Kathleen Turner was playing it fairly straight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nick Cage was doing something else in Peggy Sue Got Married. We'll say that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Something else. Kind of the falsetto helium voice, the strange false teeth.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, can't forget the false teeth.
Exaggerated hair.
Going to become a theme for Nick Cage.
Yeah. Hair is very important to the acting career of Nick Cage. But I think it's also interesting, Peggy Sue Got Married came out around the same time as Back to the Future. Because I always think about that in relation to the Crispin Glover performance in Back to the Future.
Okay.
Well, that's interesting.
As someone else who was doing a different kind of acting than other people in the film were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I know they're pals in real life.
Husband and boyfriend.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great comparison. I didn't think
Set
about
in
that.
The 50s, you know. But I think that was kind of what gave Nick Cage sort of the permission to be in mainstream films but still be himself. Because that movie was a hit. And I think people remembered him in it. And it led to Moonstruck,
And Raising Arizona. Raising Arizona comes out the next year, which might be his finest performance. It depends on who you ask, but certainly Raising Arizona is an amazing film.
It's fantastic.
He is so important and integral to its whole pacing.
Yes.
As H.I. Hi.
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 I think that may be, to me, one of the definitive Nick Cage roles, because the Coen brothers really used him correctly, I think, in that film. They reined him in enough, but they let him go crazy in the right proportion.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, and he's regular enough. Like, there's that whole idea of the couple trying to make it. You know, she's got a job. He just hasn't quite, you know, managed to be a good,
successful
guy. Yeah. And it's their love that's trying to bring it through. And then she gets this crazy idea. And all he wants to do is make her happy. But there's that Nicolas Cage part that gets in there. And
exactly. You can't squash the Nicolas Cage part.
No, he's always, and he doesn't exactly speak lovingly of working with the Coen brothers.
No.
But he, in every role, he really brings more to the character than the directors or the writers ever expect. He's always bringing in quirky mannerisms. He's doing a lot of different stuff that other actors don't do. Later on, Werner Herzog says he's a jazz musician of acting.
Yes.
And that he's improvising and bebopping all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe Roger Ebert described his acting style as operatic, which I kind of like.
Right.
Because it's not pitched at a normal level, which is what makes him fascinating. Mm-hmm. We don't want normal.
That's a perfect description of Moonstruck, his performance of Moonstruck. I mean, come on. The operatic, like the opera part, and then his relationship with Cher in that movie, and then the whole story about his hand.
The hand?
I mean, could that be more like tragic opera? And, you know.
That's good.
Yeah. And playing off of Cher, who was giving an Oscar-winning performance in Moonstruck, Nick Cage still had the elements of weird Nick Cage, which we like. But I think he was accepted by mainstream audiences also.
And he's becoming, at that point, a respected actor.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Even though he's been quirky and even though directors haven't always loved him, the audiences are appreciating him and are starting to see him as a real actor, bona fide star.
Yeah. And this was a good hair era for him.
Yes.
The hair in Raising Arizona, I think, is fantastic.
Yes, agreed.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy, spiked, like, stuck my finger in the light socket look, which was great.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That movie kills me. I just thinking about his appearance.
Yeah. And then I think that leads into maybe the end of this phase, which is Wild at Heart, the David Lynch film in 1990.
As Sailor Ripley.
Sailor Ripley, getting to sort of indulge his love of Elvis, which we know that Nick Cage is a big Elvis fan.
He was born the day before Elvis's birthday on January 7th. So he's always felt something of a kinship and connection, I think, with Elvis.
Yes.
And married interviews.
Married Lisa Marie Presley, we were talking about earlier. That kind of an amazing little bit of trivia.
Yeah, a weird dream sequence almost for me.
It doesn't feel real.
Well, you
real.
Blink
yeah.
and they were divorced. So
yeah, exactly.
It didn't last very long.
Yeah. But I've always felt that was him wanting to get close to Elvis. I don't know what their relationship was like, but I felt like that was getting close to Elvis.
But he got to be Elvis's son-in-law.
For a brief period of time.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Just like Michael Jackson.
And then she married Michael Jackson. And
yeah.
What a weird industry it is. Yes. But I think David Lynch also used him exactly correctly because...
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I mean, David Lynch is strange and Nick Cage is strange. That's a good combination. But it's also a very heartfelt performance. When he performs Love Me Tender to Laura Dern.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is true.
You feel it. I mean, it's a sweet moment, even though there's a lot of grotesque things happening in the film,
to say the least.
Yeah, Lovers on the Run. It's really a great film, right? I love his performance in it. It's, again, it's almost like a peak for him for the time being, 1990 in Wild at Heart. It would be a while again before he would capture that kind of magic.
Yeah. And I just wanted to give a shout out to the film he did, I think it was in 87, called Vampire's Kiss, which to me is also one of the definitive Nick Cage performances because I don't feel like the director was really controlling him. So it's pure, unbridled Cage. He plays an ad executive who is bitten at a club by Jennifer Beals post-Flashdance. So everyone wanted to be bitten by her at that point. And he thinks he becomes a vampire. And so he starts... acting like a vampire. I think channeling Max Schreck from Nosferatu, the silent Nosferatu. And it's literally one of the craziest performances I've ever seen in a movie. He eats a live cockroach. That got a lot of press at the time because he said, I'm method. I'm not eating a rubber roach. Uh-huh. It's a real cockroach. You can see it go into his mouth. He crunches it up.
Yeah. He says that's a really hard moment for him, though. I haven't seen the film, but he said that he tries not to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. But you just cannot believe what he does in this film. So if you haven't seen Vampire's Kiss, you've got to see it. That's really amazing.
One real quickly, too, Jeff. Have you seen Birdie from 1984?
Oh, Birdie, yes.
I haven't seen that, and I've heard his performance there is very believable. He's a Vietnam vet who's suffering from PTSD. Is that right?
Yes, and it's very dramatic, very intense. And I think that kind of shows that period of time, he could swing back and forth. He could go really wild. He could really rein it in. I think a lot of it had to do with who was directing him, really.
I think that's almost always the case.
Yeah, exactly.
With Nick Cage. And that's where he hates, or not maybe doesn't hate working with the Coen brothers, but the way he talks about it is not in glowing terms. But they, because they rein him in so much and because they control him so much, they really get maybe one of his best performances in Raising Arizona.
Exactly. Because they're notorious for not really allowing actors to improvise in films because they're so regimented about what they want, which I think maybe for Nick Cage is a little bit of a problem. maybe
a
little bit.
Sure, it is.
Regimentation is not his thing. And then we move into the 90s, which is another Nick Cage phase, both follically and acting wise. This was the era that he also became a huge action hero, which I did not see coming personally.
Yeah, yeah. With the did it start with Face Off?
No, it started with The Rock in 96, Face Off, and then Con Air.
Both 97.
Both 97, exactly. Right. That comes after his turn in Leaving Las Vegas. He's an Academy Award-winning actor now.
At this point, yes. Oscar.
That's 1995, Leaving Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And so he does hit a triumvirate of action films that's really unprecedented. It's hard to think of anybody who's been in three such huge commercial successes, boom, boom, boom. Just back to back like that. I remember the time, and he was on top of the world at that point.
He was huge. I mean, Leaving Las Vegas was an amazing performance. It's a performance that I think we appreciate, but we can't watch again because it's so wrenching.
Yeah, it's very difficult to watch.
Yeah, but he was great in
that. Yeah, one of Oscar winning, one of the best performances of that year. And it hit home for lots of people who understand that situation.
Right, yes. A very realistic portrayal of alcoholism and its after effects and...
And the victims beside the people who are afflicted with alcoholism, but the people around them.
Elizabeth Shue
in that movie is amazing.
Yes.
Amazing, amazing. It's really about her. It starts with her and it ends with her. To me, that's her movie. But Nick Cage gets the actor for an amazing performance. And probably, I mean, his strongest dramatic performance for sure at that point. I don't think he really tops it necessarily.
Right. So interesting that he then moved from that kind of Oscar validated performance into these huge action films, which he totally pulled off. I think Face Off is probably one of the best action movies ever because it's so crazy over the top, but also the acting is amazing. Nick Cage, John Travolta switching roles and acting like one another, which is a real challenge to act like John Travolta when you're Nick Cage. That's
absolutely.
A lot.
Versa,
that's
absolutely.
A lot going on.
If John Woo had only directed that film, I mean, it would be considered, it's an amazing, amazing movie that he directs there. I think it's pretty fantastic. It stands on its own
Definitely.
For lots of different reasons. John Travolta and Nick Cage, John Woo and his great action pacing. Mm-hmm. It's really a strong film.
Yeah. And this phase is when we saw the long Nick Cage hair. I think make his first appearance, the long
greasy hair.
The long greasy, scraggly hair. In
Getting
Con
a little
Air.
Older.
Getting gray.
Yeah, but he also got very pumped up physically, so he looked different. Mm-hmm. So he was changing physically and sort of, doing more mainstream kinds of films. He wasn't really weird in those films.
No. Mm-hmm. No, in The Rock, it's Michael Bay.
Michael Bay.
I mean, that's mainstream. Michael Bay is not as huge at that point by any means.
Right.
But he is. He's doing all this mainstream action stuff that's making him a lot of money.
Yes.
And this is important for what comes later for Nicolas Cage. His money issues are really at this point he hits that jackpot with his Oscar, and it turns into these three great, great films. And then he does Snake Eyes, which is not okay. as good. Yeah. yeah. And ends the decade of the 90s with Bringing Out the Dead.
Bringing Out the Dead.
Yes, but can we mention briefly the tragedy that City of Angels...
City of Angels.
Like, oh, sure.
Like, really killed me. Like, the yeah. fact that they remade that, first of all, and then they gave it to Nicolas Cage to Pete, that part, that was like, why are you doing this to me? Like, that's one yeah. of my favorite movies ever. That
Wings of Desire.
Wings of Desire yes. is one of my yes. favorite movies. Wim Wenders is one of my favorite directors. Yeah. And they give that to Nicolas Cage, which was... one of the tragedies.
Well, that was a misguided project yeah. from the get-go, I think. But I think indicative of how powerful he was in the industry at that point,
That's
that
true.
They would have even thought of him.
He's
for
one
that.
Of the top males at the time, so that makes sense that yeah. he was cast there.
Sure. But we're seeing chinks in the Nick Cage armor at this point.
We're seeing the foreshadowing of what was to come in the next decade, in the 2000s. I think after Bringing Out the Dead, Scorsese, I think, pulled a good performance out of him.
Absolutely.
Agreed,
in that
agreed.
Film, for sure.
Fairly overlooked as a Scorsese yeah. film and as a Nick Cage film.
Right.
I don't think that it gets seen a whole lot. It's a fine film. That
yeah.
1999 had so much in it and had so many amazing films that Scorsese kind of gets overlooked in that, and Nick
yeah.
Cage does too.
But a sleep-deprived paramedic, I mean, that's... in Nick Cage's wheelhouse.
Absolutely.
Completely. Yeah. Very intense performance. And then, as we talked about, I think his personal life at this point started affecting his film choices. Had some issues with the IRS.
Yeah. Well, money does weird things to you, right? For yeah. one, what happens is it starts to insulate you. All at once now you question who your friends are. Are they really my friends, or do they like me just because of all this money? And mm-hmm. and you hear a lot of yeses. You've got a lot of sycophants around you. And I think that happens to a lot of people. We saw it in our last episode, I think, a little with John Hughes, where it started becoming much harder for him to be real.
Right.
And I think that happens to Nick Cage here. He's always had the family. I think he's always had, you know, all these acting chops, but now he's got a ton of money.
Right.
I mean, he's making a lot of money for after those three action films.
Yeah, and certain weaknesses which he has addressed: castles, cars, comic books.
Comic books, yeah.
So he bought a lot of those things mm-hmm. and needed to pay for them. And started,
yeah, right around
and often forgot about taxes.
Often forgot to pay the taxes. Yes. Yeah, so I think that led him to take a lot of film roles for the money.
Sure. Although early aughts is not too bad. 2002, we get Adaptation, which is his other Oscar-nominated
Second Oscar nomination, which is a great film.
Absolutely
yes.
amazing.
Yes.
2003 is Matchstick Men, which yep. the movie itself, I like the script until about the end, but Nick Cage's performance is admirable. It really yep. sticks
yeah,
out as
good.
One of the better parts of that movie, in
yep.
fact.
I agree.
National Treasure, 2004. Again, he's making a ton of money from that.
Yeah,
that's
is.
A big hit franchise.
And
yeah.
it's on TV mm-hmm. all the time, so he's still making money off of that.
It is on TV, yes.
Yeah,
TNT.
Yeah. The Weatherman in 2005, that's a subdued Nick Cage performance.
Right.
Yeah.
That's really nice. Michael Caine's in it as well, mm-hmm. Which I think that's a really interesting turn for him. It's really sweet in parts. It's not amazing, but... 2006 is when we really see things change for Nick Cage, though.
That's
exactly. This is the phase we're in currently, I think.
Yeah, I think
Nick
we're still
phase.
In that phase.
Yeah.
There's what World Trade Center, Wicker Man.
Wicker Man.
You know.
We just have to mention Wicker Man. Neil LaBute, remake of the 70s Wicker Man, which was an amazing film. So this film, I think, has a little bit of a bad rap. I mean, it's kind of terrible, but kind of amazing.
Yeah, I think
in
it's both
way.
Those things. I watched yeah. it for the first time preparing for this podcast.
Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised that, I mean, I thought it would be hideous and horrendous and my eyes would be bleeding and I would have lost IQ points by the end of it. And instead I was like, oh, this is not so bad. I mean, when you take the bear suit in context, it makes some amount of sense in the story.
Suit and the bees.
And the bees.
Punching children
and women,
yeah.
yelling at little girls, telling
yes.
them they're dirty liars.
Yeah.
But there's some real feminist criticism in this film almost. Like the subtext is this guy who really doesn't understand women. He goes to this island where women are in control. Summer's Isle. Mm-hmm. And the women are in control, and he just doesn't get it. He does not get it at all. It's the other to him, and so everything puts him off his game. He's never quite himself, that character.
Yeah, and playing kind of a misogynist, but Neil LaBute is sort of known for sort of mocking misogyny in his films. And so I think there was actually some interesting subtext in that film, but it's so crazy that I think that sort of started the ball rolling in terms of
what Nick Cage would do.
He would do anything, exactly. Basically.
Like, that's there, one way to put
there's no boundaries. And the hair at this point also started to change
and
to sort of a very severe, I don't want to say toupee, but I
what does it?
But I think, yeah, I think there's some artificial enhancement going on.
And
the film choices are starting to get a little questionable.
Well, 2007
yes.
is the huge budget film Next, which is an enormous flop. Enormous flop. I think they spent $70 million making it, and it made $20 million or something.
Yeah.
It was an enormous flop, and it's a terrible... This is another one I watched to get ready for this, and it was difficult to sit through the whole thing.
Yes.
I was ready to start throwing stuff a lot. The dialogue was terrible.
It's rough.
It's really a bad film. Much worse than The Wicker Man, I would say.
Oh, yeah. Wicker Man's much more watchable.
Yeah, and poor Julianne Moore. What's she even doing
what
in that
she
one?
Been, yeah, I don't
know. Felt so bad for her there. She obviously was not happy.
Yeah.
No,
where we have the Ghost Rider 1, Ghost Rider 2, Season of the Witch, Drive.
Bangkok Dangerous is actually a pretty decent fight action scenes in there. Not a great storyline, but decent.
Yes.
You know.
That's 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2009 is Bad Lieutenant, which he does with Werner Herzog.
Port of Call, New Orleans. And that's sort of the exception that proves the rule, I think, because it's such a good performance, interesting film, and then he was back to the others.
Yeah, it's an amazing performance.
It's really great.
It's an amazing film. It's a great Werner Herzog film. It's a great Nick Cage film. I absolutely loved getting to watch that. I didn't think I would after watching the trailer. If you watch the trailer and don't want to watch this, please don't pay attention to the trailer. Listen to us and recognize it's a Werner Herzog film, and it's really good.
Yes. And he's got Nick Cage doing Klaus Kinski.
Yeah.
And he's obviously directing him to act as Klaus Kinski, which is an amazing idea.
He goes crazy.
And it's
what you have to do with Nick Cage at this point, is almost let him go crazy. Not to give it too much away, but I mean, in Leaving Las Vegas, he got drunk regularly, Nick Cage did, to prepare for the role and to prepare for scenes.
Method,
exactly. Mm-hmm. But in Bad Lieutenant, he's always strung out on all manner of drugs and alcohol.
We don't even know what all.
No. It's amazing what all, but evidently he did it sober. And if he did that all sober, that's a profound performance to me.
Yes.
Instead of doing cocaine, in fact, he says, Nick Cage says, he snorted baby powder.
and
that's how he would get himself crazy psyched up for the scene, was snorting baby powder, and he'd get all crazy. And he's insane in this movie.
Yeah.
Oh,
brilliantly so.
It's worth checking out for sure.
I have not watched it. I will watch it.
See it, Heather. Yes. Yes.
Kick-Ass is 2010.
Kick-Ass is great.
Fun.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But also 2010 is The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Sorcerer's Apprentice. I think, to me, the nadir of this era is Drive Angry 3D.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I didn't know it was 3D.
2011.
Yeah, 2011. Pretty awful. And then I think it was just last year he did Left Behind, the Rapture film, the Christian Rapture film, which is also pretty awful.
I haven't seen it, but I just want to say... We go from Nick Cage, you know, from the 80s, he's making maybe two films a year. Just to give a sense of what he's saying yes to here, let's look at the year 2011. He does Trespass, Seeking Justice, Season of the Witch, which I've only heard is absolutely horrendous.
Yes.
Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance, the sequel to Ghost Rider, and Drive Angry.
All of those in 1 year.
All of those in 1 year.
That's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
As a viewer.
Well, at that point, he had outbid Leonardo DiCaprio for a dinosaur skull that was from Mongolia
that he
spent $300,000 for. So now he's having to pay for this.
So you've
got
to make Drive Angry 3D.
Yes. He has to pay for this skull.
You have no choice.
Yeah.
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 And the IRS is after him now for sure.
Right.
Wicker
Man way back there when he made Wicker Man, he was producing that. He's no longer producing stuff because he's got to just make money to pay the IRS.
The bills,
yeah. Right.
I mean, Drive Angry has some of the worst dialogue delivered, written and delivered, that's been committed to celluloid ever.
Yes.
That has existed. And it's horrible.
It's a true benchmark in bad cinema.
Yeah.
And if any of our listeners have ever done a Cage match where you watch this era of Nicolas Cage films and pit them against one another, Drive Angry will win every time.
Oh, wow.
In terms of the worst, yeah. I think. Yeah, yeah. So now I think we're all hopeful, because Nick Cage is an amazing actor, that he's going to have another upswing because his career has had so many different phases. I feel very confident.
I haven't seen The Croods from 2013, the animated piece where he's got a voice in it, but yes. People really like it.
People did like it, yes.
And you know, when we decided to do Nick Cage, at first I was like, why? Why on earth would we watch a bunch of Nick Cage movies?
Good question.
But now I've watched him so much. I watched probably 6 to 8 of his films to prepare for this. And in addition, you know, I've seen a lot of others. And now I really consider him almost one of the great American actors of this generation, where that never would have entered my mind before. But he really does. He brings so much to a role if it's the right role.
That's right. Yes. And I feel like if the right director gets a hold of him at this point, they could reinvent the career for him again. But I think he just needs some guidance.
Yeah, I think for some odd reason, I'm thinking like in the next decade, he'll find him. Either a director will find him, or he'll find a director where he'll kind of get a little bit of that magic back. Maybe he'll settle a little bit in his older age. And I feel like if you could just take a little bit of that old Raising Arizona, Moonstruck, mm-hmm. and then add it to like the maturity that he has, it could be some brilliant work.
There's definitely great work in there. He's done some amazing stuff in film and worked with some amazing, amazing directors, right? The best directors around.
Yes.
Oh, yes. So we're all very hopeful. We think it's going to happen. I'm saying in the next 10 years.
Yeah. I think it's a good time.
I feel like Tarantino should get a hold of him, to be honest.
Oh. Because,
that's a good one.
You know, kind of what he did with Travolta and
so many of
Carradine, you know. So I think he could do it, and I could see him fitting into the Tarantino universe pretty easily.
That could work.
Yeah, we've got in 2017, he's got Vengeance, a Love Story coming out, The Croods 2, Southern Fury. I know nothing about that.
Sounds good, though.
Sounds like it could be good.
Fury's in the title.
Fury's
in
the title.
And it has Nick Cage.
Stephen Miller is the director.
No, nothing.
We'll
about
see.
That.
Yeah, I don't know. And Mom and Dad also is slated for 2017. So he's got still a lot coming out.
And
he's an interesting person. He lives in Las Vegas now. He doesn't have all the castles anymore.
Right.
He's ditched them. He's good friends with Tom Waits. Mm-hmm. He's got an interesting life. He seems to be very happy and content with who he is. And I think he knows that he's the butt of a lot of jokes. Obviously, that doesn't elude him. He wears a shirt with his face on it.
Yes. And that's, I think, the key that people ask, is he in on the joke at this point? And obviously he is.
He is. He gets it.
He obviously is. But then there's also, I think, that's combined with the frustration about being pigeonholed at this point in his career.
Sure.
And not being given the opportunities, perhaps, to make the great films. But he knows that what he's doing is not maybe up to his standards.
Yeah.
Oh, I think he has to recognize
that. Yeah. He's a smart person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're all going to be watching Nicolas Cage very carefully.
And his hair.
And his hair.
And his hair.
Who knows where the hair will go next, but we'll all be
dun,
watching.
Dun, dun,
dun. Dun, dun, well, thank you, Rusty and Heather. That was very enlightening.
Thanks, Jeff.
And thank you for joining us at Film Club. Next week at Film Club, this should be interesting. We're going to be talking about musicians who act. So that's sort of a broad topic. We're talking Elvis, we're talking Cher, we're talking Tom Waits, many, 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 many great musicians who have acted, which leads me to rule number 47 of Film Club. When you're a musician who acts, make sure you avoid the Elvis Presley trap. And we will talk about that next week at Film Club. Thanks, Heather. Thanks, Rusty.
Yeah, see you next week.
See you next week.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to Film Club.